Welcome to the Experience Focused Leaders Podcast. My name is Alex Shevelenko. I'm CEO and founder of Relate2, and we are on a mission, both with the podcast and with Relate2, to bring the most important ideas to life. And how do we do that? We do that through amazing, immersive, engaging experiences that move your organization forward, move your customers forward, and move us as a society forward. So if you love ideas, if you love bringing these ideas to life, stick around. Also, at the end of the podcast, we'll reveal how you could potentially be a guest speaker on the podcast as well. Let's get started. Welcome to Experience Focused Leaders. This is a very special podcast because you're going to learn today what it takes to be loved and to find happiness. Small little things. We're going to learn that from our guest, Sonia Lyubomirsky, who's recently published a book, How to Feel Loved, The 5 Mindsets That Get You More of What Matters Most. Sonia, welcome to the pod.
I'm so excited to be here, Alex.
So Sonia, I've been following your work for decades because positive psychology just really intrigued me. And you know, I kept seeing your name referenced as one of the founding mothers of the discipline. And love the research. And after reading this latest book, I just really felt like the applications of this are so relevant across our intimate, very important relationships, but also for those in the business audience that want to have deep, true relationships at work that are meaningful and create, you know, in-depth friendships that could take away incredibly practical tips that would make them better humans and better professionals. Mm-hmm. So tell us, you know, what drove you to write this latest book that's a little different? Mm-hmm. And then we'll kind of dive in into some applications for folks that think that this title doesn't apply to them because they want to achieve great professional success, but in fact, it might.
Oh, it totally will. Yeah, thank you for that intro. That's really kind. I've been a happiness scientist, you know, as you kind of intimated, for actually 37 years. It's going to be in September, 37 years. And the reason I wrote this book, and I wrote it with my co-author, Harry Reese, who is an eminent relationship scientist. So I'm a happiness scientist. He's a love scientist, is because I spent all these years, like how many years? Since 1998, 28 years doing happiness interventions. So happiness interventions are basically experiments that test different happiness practices. So they're basically clinical trials, but instead of testing a vaccine or a medication, we're testing like expressing gratitude or meditation or doing acts of kindness. And I discovered after all these years that the reason that these interventions work to make us happier is they make us feel more connected and more loved. And so that was one of the paths to the book where I was like, wow, feeling loved is really the key to happiness. And then if it's the key to happiness, how do we feel more loved? And so then I teamed up with Harry Reese, who knows all about the relationship research. And so feeling loved, feeling connected really is the key. And it has evolutionary roots, right? Imagine if you were in our ancestral past, you're in a tribe and you don't feel connected or loved, right? Mm-hmm. That actually is like life threatening.
Right.
You know, you could like, now it feels
you could
like
left
you could die.
In Sahara desert on your own.
Exactly. Yeah. Or you won't find a mate. You won't pass on your genes. Yeah. And so feeling connected and feeling loved really, it's not surprising that it would be the key to happiness. So, yeah. So then we started getting interested in like, how do you feel more loved? So that's the $1 million.
So if I translate it in a very concrete terms, like, for example, a lot of folks probably taken one of your interventions around gratitude journals, right? And that it would write something.
Yeah.
But then in the book, you would do a study and say, well, if you write something that's a gratitude, but then you would share it with the person for whom you feel grateful for. That would even have more impact because you actually
That's true.
both expressed it
And we
and
actually have done
connected with
study,
them.
yeah. We actually have done studies where we compare sharing without sharing, but it's not even about sharing. It's that if I write a gratitude letter to my mom, and I'm very close to my mom, like I love her so much, like it makes me feel more loved by her, right? When I'm thinking about all the things she's done for me over the years. If I do an act of kindness for a colleague at work, I help them with some task at work, I feel closer, more connected to them, right? So that's the key is really that sort of that connection.
You're saying saying that I'm grateful that I have a Ferrari is not going to have as
Well,
much
yes,
of
but
an
we actually
impact.
tried to do studies comparing. Yeah, it's really gratitude for people that is the key. And in fact, when we ask people to write gratitude letters, they almost always write it, or even gratitude lists. It's usually about other people.
Amazing.
So, not surprisingly, other people are so important. Sartre wrote, "Hell is others," right? It's like l'enfer c'est les autres. Which is like the opposite of what I'm saying, right? So other people can be hell, right? They're the sources of our greatest misery sometimes, but they're the sources of our greatest happiness.
Well, interestingly, so let's go in this direction. A lot of us are in situations where other people we may use them as a source of kind of to Sartre of like quote unquote blaming them for our situation or not being happy with the way those other people are, and so not accepting them. For whom they are, for the situation. And I think in the book, you give another way to handle that and to give yourself more efficacy in terms of vis-a-vis other people and kind of your reaction to them.
I have two ways to answer your thought, to respond to your thought. One is, you really do have a lot of agency and efficacy, right? So one is like, if you don't feel loved or connected to other people, people think, oh, I need to sort of make myself more lovable, right? I need to somehow show other people how wonderful I am. Or I need to somehow change the other person, right? Because you're saying you're blaming, it's the other person's fault, or I have to change the other person. And those don't really work very well, those two paths. And what we say, you don't actually have to change yourself if you want to feel more connected and loved. You don't have to change the other person. You just have to change the conversation. And that's much more feasible and doable when you think about it. Every relationship, whether it's romantic or a colleague relationship or a friendship or a family relationship, parent-child relationship, is like a series, it's a series of conversations that you're having. Even when you're not talking, right? You're communicating. And so change the next conversation that you have with that colleague or that or your parent, or your friend. And then the other way I want to answer that is you mentioned like blaming other people and not accepting them. One of the mindsets we talk about that's important to embrace if you want to feel more loved and make other people feel more loved is called multiplicity. And it's actually one of my favorite minds. It's probably my favorite mindset. And this is the idea that we're all flawed, right? We all have faults. And we know this, right? Humans are messy and complex, and we shouldn't judge other people just by one, bad behavior or one negative trait. And yet, even like I know this, and I still do that. I'll see someone doing something, I'm like, oh, what a jerk, right? And but multiplicity is really working hard to see people like a quilt of many, many qualities, right?
So
Positive,
we
and
all
they
need
we're
to
all.
grow a beard and become Walt Whitman's kind of a multitudes type of
We contain multitudes.
And then the more we do that with ourselves, the more we could then see that in others, and we could
We
see,
do it to
well,
ourselves too, right? So we turn the multiplicity lens to ourselves because we do this to ourselves all the time. We have like the self-critic. We do something, I don't know, we say the wrong thing, we insult someone, we're like, oh, we feel so bad. We don't want to judge ourselves either by our worst behavior, and we don't want to judge another person by their worst behavior. Anyway, so I think that's a very important mindset. I mean, we're kind of a little jumping ahead, but when you want that conversation to go well with your colleague or with your friend or with your wife, one important right thing to think of is to look at them with a multiplicity lens.
Well, I think one of the topics that you cover in your book is this article about and research about the study that allows people to have conversations with strangers that lead to a much closer connection to, at the end of the study. Do you want to tell us a
It's
little
called
bit
fast.
about
It's
that?
called the
Because
fast. It's the paradigm. Yeah, it's called the fast friends paradigm, where two strangers get together. Like, you and I, we were pretty much strangers when we just met to, met. And then we start asking each other questions, but we start with kind of easy questions, like, if you could have dinner with anyone in the world, like, who would it be? And then they progress to a little bit more intimate, because the pacing is really important. And then you share a little bit more of yourself. So this is called the sharing mindset. Because if I want to feel loved, you need to know me. If you don't really know me, I'll never feel loved, right? Because I always wonder, if he knew me, would he love me, right? So actually, I kind of condensed the book into a very simple formula. Actually, I have a friend in marketing, and he was like, "You really need to create a very simple formula." And I'm like, "No, I can't do that. I'm a scientist." And then I realized that actually there's sort of a formula, and that the simplest version is feeling loved equals to know and to be known. It's knowing and being known. How do we do that? Well, one way is to ask each other, increasingly intimate questions, like in those studies with the fast friends paradigm. So so you can really get to know me by asking me questions like, tell me about, what was their family member this year who surprised you the most? Something like, that these are sort of increasingly intimate questions. And then you learn about me, you get to know me, or you can ask me, what's your biggest failure? What is something that you failed at? And it doesn't have to be negative, it could be positive. It could be, what's your biggest dream? And then you share also, because if I want to make you feel loved, I need to get to know you by asking you questions, and really, and importantly, showing genuine curiosity. So this paradigm, the thing is, you're sort of reading off the question. So, hopefully you become curious as you read them off. I think that's what happens. But in the real world, you're not going to sit there with a bunch of questions, although some people do. Some people bring them to dinner. So we ask each other questions about our lives and our inner worlds that we're really curious about. It has to be genuine, or else you can't fake it. I'll be able to tell you're not really interested. And then I'm asking you a question. Say, I ask you, is there a dream that you have? Maybe I should ask you this right now. Is there a
Yeah,
dream that you
I
have?
was gonna, this is good because I was gonna ask you, like, what is your dream for this book? And what is your dream for your work, right? Like, I mean,
Oh, well, the dream, the dream is really to disseminate. I really think this is the best work I've ever done in my career. I mean, something has to be your best work, and for me, this is it. And to me, it's just disseminating this to as many people as possible, right? Because I truly believe, based on research, also based on just wisdom and experience and intuition, that this works. Like, this is the key. And so again, I was saying, I'll ask you a question. I'll ask you. So the question I might ask you is, what is a dream that you've always had, but that you have not achieved, and why? Okay. Actually, do you want to answer that, or maybe, or we can use that as a hypothetical?
Why not? Let's let me
Yeah, why
I
don't you
think
try to answer that?
it's a question worthy of thought.
Yeah. And obviously, it could be a 2-hour answer, but for now, we can kind of, a dream, a goal you've had that you have not achieved. And why have you not achieved the goal or a dream?
Well, since I'm speaking to an author, this is a little on the weaker side because
Yeah.
it's a maybe a professional
Yeah.
lish type of thing,
Yeah.
but I
Yeah.
certainly like wanted to write a book.
And you still
And
haven't.
I still haven't. And
Yeah.
I've had a I have foundations of it, and I
Yeah.
even have a
Yeah.
title,
Yeah.
and I
Yeah.
haven't allocated and I think the why part is like I haven't allocated the time it deserves to be worthy. And there could be something about the book is feels more out there than a podcast, right? Like as where we,
Right.
where I'm putting things.
Very.
So it's a more methodical, and there could be like I need to invest time in it, and then you don't have the time for whatever priorities, excuses,
Yeah.
whatever you want to
Yeah.
say. And so
Yeah.
I think I haven't I'm kind of in the creation, collection, learning phase, but not necessarily deeply in the publishing
Sure.
phase,
Well,
which is
that I would
ironic
ask.
because we help people
Well,
publish, this is our
right.
platform,
Of course,
right?
that's what you
So,
talk to people all the time. Well, my next question would be, why haven't you found the time? Like, why are you making excuses, right? Because of course it's all about priorities.
And we don't, I don't want to make this about me as much as I would like. I think
This is an
people
example. It's an
probably don't
example.
want to interview me, but I think it is pretend like I'll return this was a compliment. When I read your book, I was profoundly impressed with a very difficult combination of knowing that this is evidence-based and there is research like behind it, not like a guru dom type of person that has a coaching practice, which may be actually like spot on 90-95% of the time and may align because of results and everything, but is like you said, does not have the interventions behind it to back it up. So the problem was most that are studies that are evidence-based that kind of bore you with evidence. And you've managed to strike a beautiful balance between evidence and rhythmic flow. And I listened to it on audio, so that was the reading, but it was almost close to meditative in the way it comes across. And so that's a pretty high bar. So I think when you read quality books from people that combine things, and so this is for everybody, go get the book. You will come back and thank Sonia and myself for recommending it. Sonia for writing, obviously, and her co-writer. But so the bar, so it's potentially that perfectionist bar when you're exposed to great things, right? Like and like you said, this is not your first book, but for me, like when I get to see great stuff, I may hold off. When I see people master
Yeah,
the
but
art.
hopefully it's inspiring, right? It's inspiring. I was actually just reading advice, and by the way, I've always been a very, rigorous, systematic scientist, but as I get older, I've actually become more open to all kinds of evidence, because as you say, like whether it's anecdotal or sort of life wisdom, and so I'm more confident, I guess, or trusting of my own kind of intuition and wisdom. So anyway, so one of the wisdoms that I've been reading about, thinking about, is when you have a big goal, is to just like not think about that, right? Because it's too overwhelming, right? Like, oh, I'm gonna write a book, and but you do something right away and you do it today, right? And it could be you text someone who, has written a book or whatever, or who can give you advice on something, or you interview, and you ask them to have coffee with you, right? And so that would be it. That's it, right? That's it for today. And so you take these baby steps, right? Because otherwise, and I'm like a prof, maybe I don't know about you, I'm a perfectionist. So I feel like I need to have full information. I need to be really confident before I take a step. But really, we need to kind of sometimes we need to be like a C or a B student and not an A plus student all the time and just kind of go for it. Anyway, we're a little bit getting off topic, but
No, but it's beautiful, and I think that you're kind of hit on something, which is not everything that matters can be measured, and not everything that's measured
I mean,
matters,
we
right?
try
Like,
to
and
in psychology, yeah. So, but
and
again, kind of the example that we're showing here, I'm asking you a question about your dreams, right? And I really was curious when I asked you that question, like what your answer would be. And lots of people ask questions, and you can tell they're not really that curious. They don't, yeah. Maybe it's more about them answering. Maybe it's performative. I don't know. Maybe they feel like they should and. You can tell they're not, even if they're, looking at you and nodding, and so curiosity is really important. Genuine interest, is really important because if I'm really interested in you, you're going to open up more to me, right? You're going to tell me more. I'll say, what's the barrier? Why aren't you, getting up, say, an hour earlier every morning? What's the barrier? And you might say, yeah, well, I'm actually feeling, I'm just going to put words in your mouth. I'm actually feeling a little insecure about it, because I don't know if I'm going to do a good job, because I have to put it out into the world, or whatever the barrier is, or my father wrote a book and I don't know if I could ever measure up to him. Or, I don't know if if I have the ability. Anyway, you'll be able to open up more if I'm genuinely curious, right? And
And
then
then we have a
I have
deeper
to really,
connection.
exactly. And then this all leads to a deeper. So this is all kind of the steps to a deeper connection. And then I really listen. So I'm asking the questions, and then I'm listening. And then I'm listening, not just nodding, but I'm really taking it in. And that's so listening is attention. There's something called high quality listening in the research. And high quality listening means you have attention, you're attending, obviously paying attention is important. The second was comprehension. I'm really understanding what you're saying. And if you were going to give me a test tomorrow on what you said, I would get an A plus on it. But then there's a third component, which I think is my favorite, which is basically I care about what you're saying. It matters. Right. So it's not just like listening to a lecture. Like I actually care. Like I want you to be happy. I want you to, succeed. So that's part of listening too. Like really the best listeners, they really care. Like it matters to them what you're saying. So that's
You
so
mentioned Clinton in the book on that, right? Like he,
care people who are charismatic, like Bill Clinton. Right,
yeah.
they make you feel like you're the only person in
Yeah.
the room, and they really do. They really are so curious. So I often ask people, like, when was the last time that someone was so curious about you? Maybe it was at a dinner party or whatever, on a date or I don't know, anywhere, and they were so curious, they just couldn't wait for you to finish your story, right? They just really wanted to know. It's incredibly compelling. So charismatic people like Bill Clinton and others, they have that ability. And they're really listening, they really care, they remember what you said. So famously, Clinton would remember, and he'll meet someone again 10 years later and he'll ask them about their cousin,
It's so interesting because as you mentioned that, I kind of reflect on some of the challenges that we have in our close relationships, where if we work with somebody every day or we're married or children, we almost kind of sometimes get into trouble where we start guessing what they're going to say and like not losing the curiosity in the relationships that are the most important in
And we
our
have
lives. And yet we could be curious about some stranger, which is great, but couldn't we bring that into our
So we
work
actually,
and
there's research, we talk about this in the book, that we stop being curious about the people who we're closest to because we think we know everything about them. Maybe we've known them for years or decades, but the truth is, of course, you don't know everything about them, in part because sometimes we just haven't asked, right? There's lots of stories maybe about your wife or child or colleague that you've never asked them, but also because they're constantly having new experiences, right? Every day, your wife, child, dad, whatever, best friend is having new experiences, new thoughts, new dreams, new self-doubts, right? New feelings. And so we want to continually, ask questions, right?
Well, it's interesting. Like reading your book, and I may ask a personal question. It almost felt like you were on your own journey.
Interesting.
On the relationship side in particular,
I mean, I'm
when you
definitely am
were,
on
but
a journey. I'm not sure how it. It's interesting.
I
I didn't
almost,
know if it was really reflecting in the book.
so it's a gut, but I was gonna like, and I could probably because I am on that journey where I like I'm interested in relational work, whether it's kind of bringing Esther Perel or Terry Real and trying to understand like, okay, how do I bring that into a relationship with my kids or at work or not? Like that's really important. So I'm on this journey. And to your point, like if you're on that journey and you're serious, you discover new things about yourself every day. You see the world in a new way every way. So if you like particularly for people who are learning, like I could be very much more aware of certain things in a week's time or in a year, than a few years back. So we have this potential to change as humans. So we are never a
Oh,
finished
totally.
business, right? And so this assumption that we kind of know everything, and we use our judgy analytical side to kind of jump to conclusions, speaking for myself, gets us in a lot of trouble. Is that what you're seeing in your research?
Well, we do, lots of little, I guess, answers to that. But absolutely, like, so we're always changing, so therefore the other people are always are changing too. And you're saying sometimes we have greater pace of change or capacity to change. Absolutely. And that the part about what you said about being sort of judgmental, I actually have a little pet theory. I'm sure there's a theory out there about this that well, again, getting back to evolutionary psychology, because I think that's just a really important way to understand human behavior. In our ancestral past, when we met a new person, we needed to make an instantaneous automatic judgment of whether they're a friend or they're an enemy, right? And so we still do that. And so we have to overcome it, like, deliberately, right?
Because
So
this is
we're all
our
judgmental, just like,
crocodile brain. This is crocodile, maybe the social exclusion, inclusion brain. It's making these
exactly. Or
assumptions.
like stereotyping. Stereotyping comes very naturally to humans. There's a reason for it. So we have to, if we don't want to stereotype, we need to deliberately and intentionally, with effort, overcome that bias, that tendency.
So back to the question for you, like, so I was kind of a lead-in to a question. So we share this background of having grown up in the Soviet Union and being to the coming to the US in relatively early stages of life. As I reflect on my own journey, I'm kind of noticing a lot of little hidden things that came out of that experience growing up, the transition, the fitting in, whether it's a family and on your own into the kind of new culture. I travel a lot, so like continuing to fit in. What has been your kind of the impact of that experience in your work and life, as
Yeah,
you
such a good
progress?
question. I mean, I'm very Americanized, and most people don't even know that I'm that I'm an immigrant. Because I was, I was almost 10, so I was pretty young when I came here. Well, I credit actually one reason that I started studying happiness was the immigration, is that I noticed, and there's a couple of reasons, but I noticed that just it was so very different how Americans and Russians expressed happiness. I mean, Russians are on average less happy if you just look at scales, but if you go on the street, right, they just don't look happy.
What is
I remember
this
just
happiness
when,
business?
exactly, and I was just shocked. Like, we actually landed in New York first, which is like not known for its sort of happy expressions, and people would say hello and smile at you on the street, and I thought that was crazy. That was weird, crazy, right? We actually have a paper about this that actually it's about like expressing happiness, to strangers. There's different cultural norms, and
Cultural.
there maybe because of like the evil eye or whatever. And my mom used to, when I had my first baby, my mom was like, "Don't take the baby outside," because of the
Put a
evil
pin,
eye.
put a pin. Did you have the pin?
I'm just like, what do I live in California. I'm gonna take the baby out. They say I spent all day with the baby outside. But anyway, so there's lots of, so I've definitely been more attuned to cultural differences, which I think a lot of psychologists are sort of cross-cultural. I think because you have like insights about human behavior when you see such differences. And I became a social psychologist. Social psychologists basically study the power of the situation on our behavior, right? I mean, I'm also a personality psychologist, so I also look at personality differences, individual differences, but we're also very much affected by the situation, right, that we're in, including relationships, including conversations, like what the book is about, right? The conversation. So yeah, so you if you're in a conversation where the other person, again, getting back to like feeling loved, where the other person is truly curious about you and they're really listening and they're sharing and you're sharing, that is a very powerful situation that will make you feel more loved and connected, less lonely. And you have the power to create that situation yourself. You don't just wait for it to happen. And once you realize, so that's the other thing that I think also, I was very shy when I was growing up. I almost didn't talk to other people at all. And I kind of overcame that. Now I'm
Well
actually the
done on
opposite.
you. Well done you on that.
I
Yeah, I
think
can
it,
definitely
well,
see.
it turns out it's possible through a lot of willpower to overcome that. But unless, if, yeah, if people have trouble overcoming shyness, I don't blame them because it's very hard. But like, I actually really practice what I preach, you know. So I think I'm pretty good when I want to put the effort into it, right? Because it takes effort to really find something that you're curious about in another person and ask them and really listen, you know, because most of us are not good listeners. And then hopefully they ask you back, they reciprocate, and you share. So I want to get back to sort of this formula that's summarizes the whole book. I was saying feeling loved equals to know and to be known. But then how do you know and be known? The other formula is basically feeling loved equals asking plus listening plus sharing. Asking, listening, sharing. That's it. You ask questions with curiosity, you
Okay.
listen with attention and caring and acceptance and warmth, and then you share. Yeah, because hopefully when I'm curious about you, you tell your story, then you're gonna reciprocate. Reciprocity is a very powerful norm of social behavior. You'll
Right.
reciprocate, hopefully, and ask me questions about myself, and then we'll have this back and forth.
When you brought up your own journey and kind of between cultures. When you see organizations and individuals, like couples, for example, that come from different cultures, what are extra challenges that they have to overcome
Yeah, great question.
to
We have a
become
little section
integrated?
about this in the book. Like, how did the mind how, using these mindsets, how do they apply when, say, one person is from an individualist culture like the US or Western Europe, as opposed to a collectivist culture, say East Asia? Or also for that matter, how does it apply when people have very different personalities?
Right.
Extrovert, introvert, you know, or someone is neurodivergent, you know, or has anxious attachment style or avoidant attachment style. So there's not a lot of research on this, but we have some guesses. So with culture, yeah, like for example, there's some cultures, and Asian cultures are one example, that are more listening cultures. And some cultures like America are more talking cultures, right? So when I say feeling loved equals asking plus listening plus sharing, it's going to be, yeah, like the weight of those is going to look, it's going to look a little bit different. And so you just have to be attuned. So let's say you might be with someone in a relationship or your colleague from a culture where maybe they're not asking you a lot of questions, but they're showing their curiosity a little bit differently, you know, maybe through nonverbals, or maybe it's that one question, but it's a very deep one as opposed to 10 questions, you know? So we just have to be kind of attuned to these like differences. Cause I really think it's all universal, you know, where, I mean, I hate to use the
Right.
word universal because it's such a strong word, but really we all want to feel loved, and curiosity, listening, and sharing, I think, are going to be important to all humans, no matter what. But it might just look a little bit different. People who are neurodivergent have trouble reading cues, you know, on other people, you know, reading eye contact. And so they might act a little bit different. They might behave a little bit differently in the conversation, but you can still feel, make them feel loved. They make you feel loved, right? So yeah, it's just interesting how these differences play out in a sometimes in subtle ways.
So Sonia, maybe kind of to connect this multicultural thing, like on the thread of professionalism as we wrap up. So somebody in the executive in a large organization, they hear the word loved, right? Like we love customers, we love our employees. There is going to be the banalities that will be said, but some people will just play a little bit of lip service, and some people will go into it. The ones that go deeply into it and create these beautiful environments where people are really heard and understood, how do they model this change, right? Is it one-on-one conversations? Is there a way to do this at scale?
Yeah, I mean, great, such a great question. I'm actually on a mission to bring the word love back more into the workspace, and not just say I love my customers, but say I love you to your colleague. And you know, because love is very broad. You know, it's a very broad thing. One of my colleagues, Bart Fredrickson, has this idea that even with strangers, you can have like a drop of love, drops of love, you know, as you're talking to them, you know.
Yeah, we're all
So,
part of the universe in some way. So, you know, if we have this sort of multitude of moments, we're all love.
It's all
But
we're all love, exactly.
we're
We're
all
all love.
love.
So I know that sounds woo-woo, but it's kind of true. And so in work environments, the same mindsets apply. We also have a chapter on that too. How does it apply to like parent-child relationships, to colleague-boss relationships, you know, or your colleagues? But you still it's going to involve being curious, listening, and sharing, right? So the leader of the organization models that behavior by maybe sharing something vulnerable about themselves. It doesn't have to be some deep secret or trauma, right? It could, you know, it could be, but it could be something real about them. Like, so, but when you share, you want to share, you know, something that matters to you, right? Something that, like, when you think about who you are on the inside, you know, and so they might model sharing, they might, and they, of course, model curiosity and listening, you know, when you, and then this is like everyone knows this, right? Like, good leaders are good listeners, right? They really listen to their colleague employees and executives and colleagues.
Well, I'm gonna unfortunately have to wrap it up, but as a good leader, I'm gonna model my curiosity and say, I'm really curious how people could learn about your work, Sonia. Where can we
Great
follow
transition, Alex.
up?
Well, the book is called How to Feel Loved. The website is very easy, just the title, howtofeelloved.com, howtofeelloved.com. And there you can find the book, you can find the quiz. We have a quiz that will help people determine which mindset is their best, their strongest, and which is their weakest. And then we give tips about, you know, how what to do. And we've gotten great feedback about that. So yeah, howtofeellove.com is where you find me. Yeah. And also all my research articles under my name, which is sonialubomirsky.com. And I know that's hard to spell. But by the way, Alex, as you know, Lubomirskaya means love and peace or love of the world. Yeah. It's very appropriate for a positive
You were born
psychologist.
was a name to write this book.
I mean, I've never liked the name. You know, no one can spell it or pronounce it, but it's sort of useful for a happiness scientist, right? Love and peace. Lubofimir. So anyway, so sonialubomirsky.com. You can just Google Sonia happiness, and
And
you'll
we'll
find me.
share this in where it's appropriate in all the right places. Sonia, I can't thank you enough for the book. It's already having impact on my life, and for sharing your knowledge and expertise and love with us today.
Thank you, Alex. It was a pleasure to talk to you. And please email me if you have thoughts as you're reading the book, if you have kind of thoughts or questions or ideas. I love to hear, or anyone listening to this, I love to hear from readers. I really do. Like it's fascinating to me, like what people's responses are, because sometimes they're surprising.
Please do.
So
It's
great.
an amazing book. Thank you, Sonia.
Thank you.
Welcome back. Alex Shevelenko here. Thank you so much for listening to Experience Focused Leaders podcast. You can learn more about us at podcast.relayto.com, relayto.com. Obviously, we would love for you to send this to people that you know who would be great speakers, or just share the nuggets that you took away from this episode with your community on social. And you could learn more about what we're up to on relayto.com. You could certainly connect with me on LinkedIn, where it's just very easy to spell my name. You have to have a master's in Ukrainian. It's Shevelenko, Shevelenko. Would love to connect so that we can move together the way the world communicates about its most important ideas. Thank you for listening. We hope to see you next time.